Place, a holy place or a temple. Faith and goodness, not in passion and ignorance. Ritvik, the priest. Worshipping different demigods for different purposes. Enriched by Sarvai, all kinds of IP, certainly, grow to be by sacrificial ceremonies. According to the instruction, Shatatitwa 100 times, Vyaja, the worship, translation for Prabhupada, translation, Lord Rishabdev performed all kinds of sacrifices 100 times, according to the instructions of the Vedic Gurus. Thus he satisfied Lord Vishnu in every respect. All the rituals were enriched by first-class ingredients. They were executed in holy places according to the proper time by priests who were all young and faithful. In this way, Lord Vishnu was worshipped, and the prasad was offered to all the demigods. Thus, the functions and festivals were all successful. Purport. It is said, Komara Akshara Pagyo Brahman Govatani. A ritual should be performed by young men, even boys, at a tender age, in order for the ritual to be performed successfully. From childhood, people should be trained in Vedic culture, especially in devotional service. In this way, one can perfect one's life. A Vaishnava does not disrespect the demigods, but on the other hand, he is not so foolish that he accepts each and every demigod as a Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord is master of all demigods, therefore the demigods are his servants. The Vaishnava accepts them as servants of the Supreme Lord, and he worships them directly. In the Brahma Samhita, the important demigods, Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, and even the incarnations and expansions of Lord Krishna, like Mahavishnu, Babadakshay Vishnu, and all the Vishnu Tattvas, as well as the Shakti Tattvas, like Durga Devi, are all worshipped by the process of worshipping Govinda with the words Govinda. Linda, Hari Purusham, Paramahansa Vijayanu. Now, Vaishnava worships the demigods in relation to Govinda, not independently. Vaishnavas are not so foolish that they consider the demigods independent of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is confirmed in Chaitanya Charitamrita Ekala Ishvara Krishna Arsava Bhutya. The Supreme Master is Krishna, and all others are his servants. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So we here in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Dharma Samstapa Nartaya. There are many reasons why God chooses to come to the material world. And one of the reasons is to establish the principles of Dharma, especially when there's a thing of Dharma due to the great passing of time. When there's a great passing of time in the material world, people lose sight of the proper religious principles functioning in society, then the society goes down, both materially and spiritually. People don't know that. People think that all religion is the cause. People have neglected to follow religion. People generally like to point the finger at religious institutions. I don't know if you have a conversation outside. So you probably have a lot of questions. Probably asking him. They're pointing the finger at religion. Oh, people who follow religion, they're the problem for some. There's so many.
People are so superficially orientated that, oh, because he was an addressable religious person, he didn't follow, therefore
religion is bad. This is just doesn't have the right to do that, right? When I was at Brooks South 1 year ago, I'm supposed to go there today. This came up in a class, in fact, that we were participating in. And anyway, so then I have the right to do that's how I want, but you don't have the right to do what you want. That's hypocrisy. So then what determines, just like a simple determines. My own mind that establishes no, it's the principles of religion that establishes those points based on certain considerations of the conditioned soul. So then when Dharma goes down, everything goes down, both materially and spiritually. So Rishabhdev incarnated from Star Panama. Enjoying sex life, and okay, fine. You need resources to do that. If there aren't any resources, we've traveled the whole universe to know that we're the only ones there. And so then they generally tend to have this idea, but
It's not a correct idea. Actually, entities. Sarvagata, Krishna says, there are living entities all over the planet, all over the world. And they have bodies to live in certain atmospheres. Just like we don't have bodies to live underneath the water and breathe, right? Anyone has a body like that? You want to go scuba diving, right? Some people like scuba diving, right? They don't go scuba diving in this body. They put on a swimsuit body, right? With a little mask on the face, right? They change their bodies, right? What is that? Tatadehantara prapti? They change their bodies so they can go scuba diving, right? Because they can't breathe underwater. So if you want to exist underwater, you need a certain type of body to do so. So there are living entities living all over the universe, even in the sun, but they have the bodies to live in those places. And these higher living entities, they're called these demigods, and they're universal managers. And there's a relationship between these higher entities and the earthlings. The relationship is one of reciprocation. The earthlings do what's called as yajna, or sacrifice, for the pleasure of the demigods. And the demigods, in turn, provide the material resources that we require for our existence. Modern science, although people are proud to talk about how we're advancing, modern science is evidence of this, but they can't provide the natural resources everyone requires for living. They can only manipulate the natural resources. They can't make them, right? The material resources are already there. Just like this joke we often like to tell as devotees of a scientist going up to God and saying, we don't need you anymore. Science has advanced to such a point. Oh, God was like, that's great. You know, I could use some relaxation time, right? So, what's your evidence? Can you make a universe? Yeah, we can make the universe. So then the scientist starts collecting all the materials, and God said, wait a minute, that's my property too. Right? I provided all those things. You can only manipulate them, but you can't provide for them. So the material resources are required. And if you want to enjoy material happiness, you need things like clean water. I think you might be able to live without a Nintendo 64, but you do need water. Right? Water is absolutely essential. You need things like clean air. You may or may not need the new MacBook that's coming out, but the clean air is absolutely required. Right? So these natural resources are actually necessary. Those things are, in other words, we live by the natural gifts given by the Supreme Lord. People don't accept that. They think science is giving us so many things that God can't provide. But they can't do this. These natural resources are given by God and ministered through the demigods, the devatas. So there's a relationship between man and devatas. Man performs yajna, the devatas provide resources. When humanity starts performing yajna, then the demigods restrict the natural resources. And guess what that means on the Earth planet? A lot of chaos, right? Because it's like, you know, I always like to joke in this way. Suppose there's a pie of pizza, right? How many people are in this room? You know, at least almost 20 people in this room, right? Suppose there's a pie of pizza and there's 10 pieces and everyone really, really wants it. Let's say pizza was absolutely essential for our survival. Let's give it that scenario, right? Everyone absolutely needs pizza in order to live, right? There's 10 pieces, there's 20 of us. What do you have? A problem, right? You have a problem. Unless everyone's like really advanced in culture and they can know how to divide that pizza up in such a way that everyone can get a slice and live, right? But if people aren't that advanced in culture, then guess what? Probably the men are a little bit stronger, you know, they might take all of it, you know, and then we have a huge problem. Houston, we have a problem, you know, a huge problem. So this is what's happening in the material world because they're not advanced in Dharma. Everyone's just doing whatever they feel, whatever feels good, and that's religion to them, or that's spiritual, right? Religion is so restricting. You can't do this, you can't do that. So many rules, but I can do whatever I want, and that's spiritual. Okay, so Mr. Spiritual Person, I'm stronger than you, and I'm going to take all the resources for myself. I'm being spiritual. That's what, according to your definition, that's spiritual. Of course, people don't exactly think like that, but it comes up in their behavior. That's kind of the attitude. It's like a non-spoken aversion to authority. I don't follow authority. I do as I want. I'm the authority for everything. I don't have to follow authority. They don't exactly say it that way, but that in their activity, that's how it comes out, their behavior. So the actual authority, God, has told that you should perform yajna, even if you want to enjoy material sense gratification. which is probably most of living entities in this material world. You have to perform yajna. No, I do what I want. Okay, so you do what you want. Guess what? The devatas don't get their shares of oblations and yajna. They start restricting the resources. This is called aidivika klesha, right? Misery is caused by the devatas. They restrict the resources, and then in the earth planet, from that comes so much problem. You know, people tend to maybe be more greedy. They tend to be more, the law of the jungle, as it were, might is right, becomes the operative principle because they're not advanced in Dharma and culture. So God, Rishabhdev, we're hearing about how Rishabhdev came to establish the principles of religion, you know, by example. And he's also a Kshatriya, he's a king, so he instills it in the educational system that you have to do this. It is not that anything goes and that's all right. It's not that anything goes and you're going to make advancement materially or spiritually. There's actually, this world works according to certain principles, right? People applaud the materialistic persons for discoveries of so many laws and this, that, and the other. But the laws were already there before they discovered them, right? Who made the laws? So that's God. And he also establishes how they should be followed. No, I do what I want. Okay, so expect everything to go down. Right, that's what happens. So Rishabhdev wants to show by example, and as a king, he also makes sure that everyone's educated accordingly. That everyone in their youth, they will learn how to perform yajna. Now, because the devatas are different limbs of the body of the universal form of the Lord. So one, although generally people will worship some demigod for this thing, some demigod for that thing, some demigod for that thing, because they're the limbs of the universal form of the Lord, one need only worship Vishnu. And just like when you put food in the stomach, all the limbs get energized. Or when you put water on the root of the tree, the whole tree benefits. In the same way, by just worshiping Krishna, for material or for spiritual, just by worshiping Vishnu, all the devatas would be satisfied. So yajna really means service to the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Authority. So Prabhupada is saying that. Vaishnavas are not so foolish to think that the limbs are the same as the body, per se. There's a non-difference, but not exactly the same. So you have to worship Vishnu, right? Vishnu should be, and when Vishnu worship is there, then all the demigods are satisfied, and guess what? They provide resources. The resources are there, so if you want to enjoy material life, hey, great, you can do so. And for those who want to make spiritual advancement, then they'll use those resources accordingly for spiritual upliftment. Everything goes very nicely. So this is the age of Kali. Kali Yuga means the age of ignorance, right? If anyone has no ignorance means destruction. So this is the age of ignorance. Everything goes down, right? Religious principles are being destroyed. Respect for authority is being destroyed. Just common human decency is being destroyed. This is the age of Kali, age of ignorance. So people are not educated according to the proper principles of religion. Everyone is just doing whatever they want. So therefore, in this age of Kali, yajna that's been prescribed has been very simple, right? Because people are not very intelligent, although they tend to think they are, right? They think that I'm so smart, look at my so many letters after my name. Right, but actually, the real case is people are not so intelligent as they tend to think they are. And so therefore, the process of yajna has been made very simple. It's been made very simple. What is that process of yajna? Simply chanting the holy names of God. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. If one wants to have spiritual prosperity, chant Hare Krishna. If one wants to make spiritual advancement, chant Hare Krishna. So this should be, ideally, people should get this training in their youth. So Prabhupada's mentioning that. It's mentioned in Sanskrit that the yajna was not only done according to proper deshakala vaya, the proper time, the proper place, the place like a temple, the dravya, there were pure ingredients. That's going to be very hard to find. Right? But another point that's been, Vaidya means it was done by people who were young. Shraddha, who were young and faithful. So if you go to Mayapur, especially you see like Bhaktivedanta Purnamaraj's ashram, they do all the yajnas, right? These little kids, right? Generally, you come to America, you see like the older devotees doing all the yajnas, right? You can't even imagine the kids doing the yajnas. But there, all the young kids are doing all the yajnas. It's like amazing, right? We become very proud if we know one or two verses from Bhagavad Gita, right? We're like, man, dehino smiya tai dehi, I got it going on, right? I'm so smart. I'm really becoming elevated in my consciousness. You go to Mayapur and see these kids, you know, and you just feel very humbled, you know. Oh my God, you know, I don't know anything, you know. And they know how to do all sorts of things. Like one young boy, my bead bag broke when I was in Vrindavan. He made me a bead bag out of some torn cloth. I'm like, how is he going to do this? He said, hold on. He just, you know, took some cloth, did something. You know, in 5 minutes I had a bead bag. I was like, this is incredible, you know. Otherwise I was going to have to walk around, you know, with the beads hanging out and... So they learn all these things. So and when one is young, you learn all these things. Ideally, the young and faithful. Young and faithful means they're easily impressionable, right? Just like nowadays, people are so stuck up on one type of ideology. I'll just give an example, like of evolution, for example. People are so convinced of evolution, not because they're trained in science, not because they've understood all the evidences, or they've understood all the details where there are discrepancies. It's not because they've gone through that they believe in evolution, because that's what they learned in their youth. It's been indoctrinated. So then someone comes up with another opinion, it can't be right. Why can't it be right? Because I didn't learn that in my youth. But they don't say that. What they say is because there's so much of proof, as if they're scientists who've actually studied it a very detailed way, right? And even when the scientists present it to the lame man of society, it's not like they're presenting their evidence, because we're not smart enough to understand it, right? How many of us are trained scientists who can understand all the detailed formulas, right? If they show you a paper of math formulas, it looks like Sanskrit, right? We're not going to understand it. It's not like we understand what it's going on. So what is it that they're showing us? What are they showing us? They're showing us some very simple something-something and just leading us like foolish animals into a certain conclusion that usually happens to be atheistic. There is no God, right? That's usually what's going on. But it's not like people are actually understanding all the details. And on top of that, they have enough sense gratification not to care, right? Give me a Nintendo 64, give me a girlfriend and a little bit of alcohol, and I'm good to go. I could really care less what's going on. Right. Oh, but I don't believe in them because science has proven it, right? Because I really understood all these things, right? That's the reason. So this is what's going on. So the youth is so important because the children are very faithful. They're easily, impressionable. You can easily imprint whatever conception onto them that you want. So then the race, in a sense, there's always been a battle between divine and demoniac in the material world. And the basic battle is to capture the innocent people, right? To capture the youth, right? That's the basic battle. If you get the youth, then you've captured everyone. Because these old people who believe in all these things are going to die off soon anyway, right? So if we capture the youth, they'll grow up with these conceptions that we've given to them, and then everything is under control, right? So then the greatest threat to the material world, in one sense, is improper education. This is the greatest threat to the material world. Srila Prabhupada is given as a jewel cobra. A cobra is already very dangerous, but they have a jewel that's a little bit more dangerous, because the jewel will attract you, but the cobra will kill you, right? So one of the greatest threats is miseducation, right? Who establishes what's the right education? That's God. God establishes that, but no one accepts, so they're teaching them whatever they want. Conclusions that usually don't lead one towards God. So then this is the greatest threat to society. If the youth do not learn how to worship God, then in a few generations, you have a very degraded society. And it degrades exponentially each generation after that. Right? So then, and in Kali Yuga, because in order for things to prosper materially and spiritually, people needed to be taking Krishna Nam, the holy name of God. That's the prescribed yajna for the age. They need to be doing that. So then if they, through species arguments, come to the conclusion that that's not necessary, then you have a huge problem materially and spiritually. Materially, people are not going to be happy, and spiritually, their consciousness is going to degrade. So then what prevents people from taking this Christian nam is if they become too externally orientated. So I've been mentioning this more and more and more. I'm getting more and more, I think, realization about it. I don't know if I would say realization, but it's been in my mind for the last few days. When this Maharashtrian Brahmana in Benares, he went to the Prakashananda Saraswati and all of them, and he was speaking about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the beauty of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the glories of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Prakashananda said, oh, I know this Chaitanya, he's just a sentimentalist. You know, he does not teach about Brahman and Atma, Chaitanya this, Chaitanya that. He was going on and on. So the Maharashtrian Brahmana, he went back to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he said, I noticed that this Brahmana cannot say the name Krishna. Chaitanya, he could say Atma, he could say Brahman, he can say, but he couldn't say Krishna. You know, he wasn't saying Sri Krishna Chaitanya, just Chaitanya. So why is it he couldn't say this name of Krishna? So then Mahaprabhu goes on, you know, in a long exposition about the glories of the holy name, which is very nice and edifying. But his final statement in this exposition, he makes a point that the Mayavadi Gana Yata Mahabahir Muke Ate Eva Krishnanam Aishe Taramuke. He says that this Mayavadi Gana Yata Mahabahir Muke, they are greatly Bahir Muk. Mahabahir Muk means greatly externally orientated. Like, that means completely absorbed in matter, right? Completely absorbed in matter, right? Mayavadi Gana. Who's the Mayavadi Gana, right? Prakashananda Saraswati and all of them, right? No, not just them. The word Mayavada, Vada means like speech or doctrine, right? So one whose doctrine is all about Maya, right? Krishna's Maya, Krishnanam is Maya. The individual nature of the souls, that's Maya. That's what it means to be a Mayavadi, right? And that's kind of what the modern empiricists are also telling us, right? That nature is impersonal, right? That there's no personal controller behind it. We are ultimately don't truly exist as individuals. We're just an amalgamation of chemicals. So these persons are also Mayavadi Gana, right? So the sannyasi Mayavadis, we may not see so much, but these Mayavadis we got to hear from all the time, right? We have to undergo that adibhoti kaklesha in the modern world of hearing from these people and hearing these things over and over again. It really is a misery for those people who are religious, at least. And these Mayavadi Gana, when they're Mahabahir Muk, when they become extremely externally orientated, then what happens? Ate Eva Krishnanam Aishe Taramuke. They can't utter the Krishnanam. And if they can't utter the Krishnanam, that means yajna isn't happening. That means the material world goes down, both materially and spiritually and consciousness. So then the greatest threat, especially to the youth, because you have to inspire the youth, Komara Achare Pragyo, Dharman. And Dharma, and what Dharma particularly? Bhagavad Dharma, particularly. At least Dharma. But of all types of Dharma, Bhagavad Dharma. But that's not what people are getting in the modern educational system, right? That's not what people are reading about, right? I don't think you learn about these things in Harry Potter. You know, it would be nice, but I don't think that. But then we're buying Harry Potter books for our children, right? Because they're kids, right? They can't know these things, right? But if you go to Bhaktivedanta Purnamaraj's ashram in Mayapur, they can know it, right? They're all like between the ages, they're young. They're like super young kids. You feel really humble. They can know it, but our kids can't know it. Does that make sense? That our kids can't know it? So we got to get them Harry Potter books. We have to get them PlayStations and Nintendo 64s. We got to take them out to the cinemas. And this way, kill their consciousness in the name of being nice and loving and accommodating because they're just kids. This is a very dangerous culture. It's a very dangerous culture. So it is essential to understand this point, the danger that we're in, and being misled, and being miseducated. This is the greatest threat, because really, worse than tsunamis and all these things going on in the material world, which is certainly, you know, sad, no doubt. It's, you know, when you hear about it, you don't feel nice, you feel bad. There's no doubt about it. But that's not the greatest threat to the jiva, because the jiva can survive a tsunami, right? There's no birth or death for the soul. But the soul remains in such a condition on account of ignorance. So that is the greatest threat to the soul. Tsunamis and world hunger, and these things are not threats to the soul. They're not nice for the material situation, but they're not threats to the soul. But ignorance is a threat. So that means the most powerful thing in the material world is knowledge, proper education. That's the greatest, most powerful thing. And if people are miseducated, that also is on the other side, most deadly, right? So then it is absolutely essential, especially for devotees who are trained up and in the modern way of thinking, to present challenges to these Mayavadi Gana, to show that it is not correct. And for those persons who are involved in preaching activities, to show the people who happen to give us their ear somehow or other, to show them that the types of things that they grew up on was not actually correct. And you have to show it, prove it to them. Prove it philosophically that it's not correct, it's not true, it's not it's sustainable. We have to show them that otherwise they cannot put faith in Krishna Nam. It's just going to be like a type of activity you do to feel peaceful, a palliative for the miseries of the material world. You know, palliative, this word palliative means something that mitigates but doesn't take it away. Right, so then they're going to think religion and chanting Krishna Nam and worshiping the deity, this is all just a palliative for the miseries of the material world. Right, it just helps us deal with the material world. No, that's not what religion is. Religion is the absolute necessity of the soul. Absolute necessity. But they won't be able to place faith in that if all they are hearing their whole life was something that says you don't have to do that. That's not really important. Right, so then devotees have to be able to show this. Those who shall deem themselves preachers and so on have to be able to show this. Otherwise, you cannot. They will not be chanting with faith. They'll be having so many doubts. And it comes up. Some devotees be melting me in our congregation. Some doubts. You know, why do we have to really worship Krishna, this, that, and that? Why is it coming? Because what do they have to study? Right, they're studying Bhagavad Gita in school, right? They get a chance to study that, right? If they write a paper, they can write the conclusions of Bhagavad Gita, right, without getting an F, right? That's what's going on, right? No, that's not generally what happens. You have to study the Mayavadi Gana, right? And you have to represent whatever they say in order to get that A to pass your class. And then after you finish your study of all that, there's hardly any time for study of Krishna, right? Therefore, Krishna doesn't really true, but this is. So we're in like a really dangerous situation in the material world. Now, obviously, it's Kali Yuga, what can be done, right? We're probably going to think like that or say like that. That might be the tendency. But we do have a duty to, you know, to ourselves and to suffering humanity. Whether we can do anything about it or not, our duty is to try as, you know, part of the parampara, or at least contribute in our own small way. We may not be able to directly go and challenge, for example, some of these things. But we should at least do have mercy upon ourselves and try to understand these things in truth in order to augment our faith so we can chant the name with faith, right? That's at least that minimum thing we can do for ourselves. And then with others, we according to our capacity, we can try to help them see the light. Tamasima Jyotir Gama. But they won't be able to go to the light if they have no faith that there really is light on the other side of the tunnel. Right? Because it's been proven that there's no light on the other side of the tunnel, thanks to our careful study of the Mayavadi Gana's doctrines. Right? You understand? So obviously my tone is like quite like challenging, because I was a little frustrated yesterday. I came across a link of a particular book written by a particular popular atheist. I think his name is Richard Dawkins. And he's basically, you know, more or less telling that he's like in par with being a prophet, right? Because what is a prophet? This is how it's defined. A prophet is one who tells it like it is, right? Who tells what is the reality and in a time where people are not able to easily assimilate it. So he's, usually prophets are revolutionaries. So now he's telling it like it is, right? There really is no God. This is all just an illusion. So he's more or less like a prophet of the new age, of the new era, right? So when I saw this, I was a little bit frustrated, you know? Like, man, this is nonsense, definitely, you know? But I may not be able to prove it, right? You need to be able to show the evidence how it's nonsense, you know? I may not be able to prove it, so I was like, why don't some of our devotees just give direct challenges to some of these things, you know? Just to, at least for helping devotees, Because we're going to have to be dealing with all these things in the future more and more and more, and hearing these types of doubts of people. And, you know, something happens if you're not strong in your own faith. When you hear the doubts of others, you become doubtful, right? So then that means we'll be surrounded by bad association. Even if they happen to become devotees, that might not be the best association either. Because they'll ask a question in class, and there will be a doubt. I'm like, man, I have that doubt too. You know, and then you're in a dangerous situation, you know? So we're in a dangerous situation. That's my point. And I'm speaking in this way to show that there's a great need to present challenges to these Mayavadi Gana, these groups of Mayavadis who are misleading the society. No doubt it's a mislead. You know, we can be nice and loving and bring everyone together, but it's not going to work if people don't want to keep Krishna in the center. Right? You can have a material society, but Krishna still has to be in the center. Right? He still has, otherwise it doesn't work. So you can't expect to group people up together in the name of family and love unless Krishna is involved in some way. And by the way, generally the Mayavadi Gana don't want Krishna to be involved. So how can we be friends with them in a spiritual sense? In a material sense, we're always going to be respectful and cordial. That's natural. That's culture. But we can't really be grouped up with them because our mentalities are too different. Our conceptions aren't matching. So I just wanted to make that point. I only have about 5 minutes, and I really do have to skedaddle. If anyone wants to say anything quickly, yeah.
There's another kink in it in terms of our society, which has a lot of people whose religion is Christian-based and based on the Judeo-Christian scriptures, which presents the universe very differently. There's one planet. It's flat, there are pillars holding it up. Yeah. You know, the skies are all glued to the heavens. So in that context, there's no realistic.
Well, I'll be real with you. Even in the Vedas, we got some far out things about the universal structure. Turtles are holding it up and elephants. And then someone asked us, we said, well, you got to have faith in the Shastras, you know. So in that way, we're not so much different from in the Christians in that sense. But generally what you do find, I'm going to mention this, is that when these Mayavadi Gana, when they attack religion, it's usually the Middle Eastern traditions, the Abrahamic religions, like Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. They never usually touch the Vedas, right? In other words, the Vedic voice is not being heard. People don't even know it really exists. They know some terms from India, right? Karma, Dharma, you know, a few things like that. But they don't know what is the Vedic perspective. It's not being talked about. And when these Mayavadi Gana attack, religion is not the Vedic voice that they're addressing. It's usually these Abrahamic religions. So there needs to be a crying need for the Vedic voice to be heard for the benefit of suffering humanity. You know, and that may not be like one of us who's going to be pioneering that or something. But we need to find out or mail our devotees some, you know, cry out. We need help. You know, we have so many powerful devotees in our movement. It's Prabhupada disciples, powerful, extremely powerful. Their voices, you know, can cut through all illusion. You know, and there's a necessity to reach out to them, you know, and say, please leave us something so that we will be able to deal with the Mayavadi Gana after you depart in order to protect the soul from the great threat of the viper of ignorance, which is poisoning everyone in this modern society. Like that. The Vedic voice is not so much known to people. And I find that when people hear the Vedic voice, even a little bit of it, so much illusion gets dispelled. Just a little bit, one, two presentations. And man, like, this makes so much sense. Years of confusion and bewilderment is cleared up in one or two presentations of the Vedic voice being heard and spoken. That's the power of it, but it's not being so much known. So there's a crying need, you know, and I'm going to start myself writing out, you know, like I need help. I want to know how to deal with these things in a more effective way in the future. At least for people who are going to be coming, they're going to have these doubts because that's what they've been trained up with. How are we to address that, you know, in a way that, you know, smashes these misconceptions, which is absolutely necessary for the upliftment of the soul. So like that. Is there anything else? It's 1 minute. No? Please forgive me. I hope you can hear the attempt for a compassionate presentation, although the tone is like kind of like heavy and sounding a little bit strong, which is not usually, maybe sometimes I do that, but I don't usually do like that, but I was just really frustrated seeing this yesterday. You know, I don't know about you, but it's like you feel like crying, like, man, here something very horrible is happening, and no one's there to present the opposite picture for the protection of the world. So it's like a really sad thing happening. So there's a need for the Dharma. So looks like the rain pulled up a little bit. So we're supposed to do the Harinam Sankirtan today for a little, just 25 minutes, half hour in the neighborhood. So please go out. I can't go. I have to go. I'm going to be late. So I have to leave for the GBS. I made this thing 2 weeks ago. I've forgotten about it. So please go out. Do the real thing, the Yuga Dharma. Please, when you're walking down the sidewalk, the general etiquette that we follow is two lines. Not that we spread out throughout the street, but two lines walking down the aisle, you know, chanting Hare Krishna. If there's some open space where devotees, like we were at Chicago and Michigan, it was an open space, we can do our thing a little bit, great. But then when you're in the sidewalk, you know, try to maintain two lines if you go and chant Hare Krishna. Don't think that because I'm a devotee, I can do as I please. That's not religion. So there's you have to follow some type of etiquettes for respect. And if the sidewalk's a little bit small and the person is coming down, then make a single file so the person can get by. If they don't cross the street, because sometimes they might cross the street, they feel uncomfortable. But if they don't cross the street, make a single file. Don't think I'm a devotee, they should bow down to me, right? That's not culture. So, you know, double lines like that down, go through the neighborhood, you know, spread them with the holy name. And just like we did it the other day, the kids were coming out to the windows and waving at us, right? That's powerful. That's really powerful. And then this is what I'm speaking about now. You got to capture the youth, right? So the youth, we can imagine going past, you know, this middle school. Imagine some kids, like, I'm going with them. Forget this school stuff. We might have to tell them, you got to go back. We might get in trouble, you know. But it can happen, especially if they see regularly religion happening. People don't see religion anymore. All the religious places, they're all in their own little space. In fact, a lot of religions, when they perform their worship, they have to do it where no one can see it, right? And that's what the Mahavadi Gana want. Don't see religion. When Hiranyakashipu started reigning over the universe, what was the first thing that he did? Persecute the Vaishnavas so no one will see religion, right? They won't know about it. Just like in Asian countries, they don't even have a word for God. That's how crazy, you know, the world is going to get there. You know, it'd be against the law to use the word God, Krishna, any Paramatma, even Ishwara, none of that. Bhagavan, you know, you can only speak nonsense. That is a law. You know, the law. Gramya Kata only, nothing else. And if you speak anything that's actually meaningful, you'll go to prison. Now, don't think it's not going to come up. It is going to come up. But right now, it's not there, so we have an opportunity to maybe do something about it. So anyway, I got to skedaddle. I'm really late, but I hope you can understand the essence of what I was trying to present, even though it may not have been seemingly the most humble type of presentation. But it was a presentation expressing like a real concern. My whole japa was this only issue. You know, my mind was like racing, you know, to this. But it felt good in a lot of sense because just like we know about anger, it should be applied in Krishna consciousness, right? So it's kind of like we should be angry about these things, you know, amongst other things. But anger about, this is a way to show anger towards the non-devotees, frustration at some of these types of materialistic philosophies and so on, which is causing the great degradation of the human society. So thank you for being understanding. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jaya.